Hey everyone, welcome to Freethought Fest 2. I'm really excited. Thank you all for coming. This is awesome. I'm Mike Amita. I'm the Vice President of Atheist, Humanist, and Agnostics on campus. Thank you all for coming. Once again, Freethought Festival 2 is a free conference. So if you haven't registered yet, it's free. Just go upstairs and register. It's we need for ASM stuff. It'd be great if we knew how many people are here. So please register if you haven't yet. Thank you all for coming. And thanks to the vibrant local skeptics and atheist community of Madison for helping us put this on. I'm going to keep this brief. You don't want to hear me talk. Talks are going to be recorded. I want the officers to come up, the AHA officers. Could you guys step up? Chris, that's you too. Come on. These are the people who helped put it on. Sarah, get up here. If you're looking for someone to talk to, if you have any questions, comments, I didn't. That wasn't for that. No. They're super modest. Don't worry about it. If you have any questions or comments, concerns, you think it's too hot or too cold, we'll get complaints of both. If you want to do that, please talk to any of these AHA officers. Look for people with a blue name tag on, and we will assist you however we can. But these are going to be the people that are putting on the conference.
Or the registration table.
Or the people at the registration table who are still working super hard up there. So go away. Thank you for coming up. But yeah, those are HA officers. They're great. What else do we have? Visit freethoughtfestival.org to look up the schedule, to look up speaker biographies, and to look up the harassment policy. I'm going to give very brief introductions because, once again, you don't want to hear me talk. You came to hear other people talk. So you can look up their biographies. I'm going to be giving brief ones. If you want to live tweet or just tweet about the Freethought Fest, the hashtag we're using is FTF2. You can do that. Also, a note about the internet. If you turn on your wireless network, you can find, what was that? The UWNet wireless network. And then there's a guest registration box you can click. If you're not a student, and from there you can sign up for guest internet. It's free. You'll have to do that every day, but that's how you can get access to internet. What else do we have? Thank you to the sponsors, the Freedom From Religion Foundation and the Secular Student Alliance. They helped us put on this awesome event, so thank you, FFRF and the SSA. There will be speakers talking about those groups later. What else do we have? Thank you, everyone, for coming, and thank you for the speakers for coming here. That's great. Speakers are going to have 50 minutes for each speech, and that includes Q&A, and then we'll have 10 minutes for you to use the bathroom, get up and stretch your legs, and for us to have the next speaker up. Again, talk to an officer if you have any questions, comments, or concerns, and have fun, everyone. Thank you again for coming. Let's get to it right now. There's going to be 3 days of the Freethought Fest. The themes are Science Friday, which is today, because today's Friday. Tomorrow is Fight Back, and Sunday is Secular Students. So I really hope to see all of you for the next 3 days. It's going to be a lot of fun. Without any further ado, I'm going to introduce our first speaker. He's been a psychologist for over 30 years. He's author of the books The God Virus, How Religion Infects Our Lives and Culture, and Sex and God, How Religion Distorts Sexuality. Please welcome Daryl Ray.
Wow, it's fun to be back here. This is the second time for you guys, and second time for me too. I appreciate this. This is going to be a lot of fun. And I am disappointed to tell you that no, I'm not doing duck sex, duck porn today. But there will be a little bit of pornography, so if you're a little sensitive about nudity, you might want to close your eyes or get out. I don't care. Because this is talk about sex, all right? And I do come saying greetings from, I'm sorry. Wrong slide. Greetings from Australia. Oh, there it is. I got that out of order. Greetings from Australia. I was just in Australia a week ago. It took me 4 days to get back home after an enormous snowstorm that we had. I slept in everybody else's bed except my own getting back. But anyway, I had the coolest time in Australia meeting freethinkers. I spoke to the skeptics of Sydney. I snorkeled with the atheists of the Gold Coast. I pub crawled with the atheists and skeptics of Brisbane, and talked to the skeptics of Launceston, Tasmania, and then met with almost all the leaders of secular Australia, including this woman. She is amazing. Fiona Patten is the president, get this, of the Sex Party of Australia. I'll bet you've never heard of a sex party before. I hadn't. And I got to have a whole evening sitting next to this amazing woman and listen to her talk about what the Sex Party of Australia stands for. And it really stands for about the same thing that we stand for. Gay rights, marriage equality, sex worker protections, all sorts of stuff. Really interesting woman. She actually runs for office. They're serious about their sex in Australia, whereas we may not be quite as serious about ours. Or we're very serious in the wrong way. Okay, well, I'm going to go back. I got up this morning. I checked Amazon. I kind of looked where my books are. But this was just precious. This is the books on sex and religion. And sex and God is right here, number 7, just below a healing love through the Tao. And my peace, give you healing sexual wounds with the help of the saints. And what Christian wives should know about sex. I think this is great, putting what Christian's wives should know about sex. And so I think they should read both of those books, actually, so they'll probably learn more from mine. But all right, before we get going here, I do want an unpaid political announcement here. And that is, as the founder of Recovering from Religion, I'd really like you to go find out what it's all about. We're an international organization that started about 4 years ago. Sarah Moorhead's the executive director, but how many of you know Jerry DeWitt or heard Jerry DeWitt? Okay, he resigned January 1st because he's writing this new book. We're all excited about seeing his book come out soon. But we've got hundreds of meetings throughout the world, including 3 in the United Kingdom, in India. We've got meetings in Australia and Canada. And if we could get one in Madison, that'd be pretty cool too. So think about it if you're interested in recovering from religion. Do a little bit about it. Here's the websites that I'd also like to point you to, and that's our Recovering from Religion and our Secular Therapy Project. How many of you have heard about the Secular Therapy Project? Oh, good. There's several of you have heard. Great. If you're looking for a therapist, go to this site, because we guarantee this is a secular therapist. They don't get through us unless they can prove to us they're secular. You won't get a therapist, psychotherapist, or a counselor that's going to pray with you or send you back to church or try to get your chakras realigned or anything like that. So, also, how many of you have seen Richard Dawkins' newest documentary, Death, Sex, and the Meaning of Life? Okay, only 3 people. Okay, you guys got to go watch this. Great documentary, of course, because I'm in it. But, no, it's a very good documentary, and I think it's really interesting because Dawkins is, I think he's pushing the envelope. He's trying to get us to start looking at things in bigger picture, and the whole idea of death and sex, those are pretty critical issues. I'm going to be talking about sex today. I'm not into death just yet. All right, so tonight we're going to talk about the shame of it all, or why do we act like Christians. So, how many of you masturbate? I do. Raise your hand if you masturbate. All right, okay, only a few likes. There are a few. Can you imagine asking that question in a church? Imagine asking that question in a Mormon church or a Catholic mass. Nobody would raise their hand, but we know they're all doing it, don't we? Because the research shows it. I studied with the great psychotherapist Albert Ellis back in the 1970s. How many of you have heard of Albert Ellis? Okay, a lot of people have. Well, he had a famous saying. He said, 97% of all men masturbate, and the other 3% are lying. And it's probably about as true for women, although we do know women masturbate somewhere around the 80% level, and maybe 20% are lying. I don't know. But the fact is, the vast majority of human beings either have masturbated or do masturbate. It's a very important component of our sexuality. And probably you're the first sex partner you will ever have in your life, and you may be the last sex partner you ever have. So let's get used to it. But religions can't admit that kind of thing. So we see religionists living a life of shame, living a life of lies. And they're ashamed, for instance, they had premarital sex. I know a hell of a lot of ministers who stand up in the pulpit every Sunday morning, preach against premarital sex, but they themselves did it. I know lots of Sunday school teachers that preach against premarital sex, lots of elders of churches, and lots of priests, and Catholic priests, who had sex, and yet they preach against it. They're ashamed to admit that they masturbate. They're ashamed to admit they use porn. They're ashamed to admit that they've done sex acts that disgust them. and they're ashamed to tell the truth about sex to their own children. So we know all of this because it's a big lie. Religion is a big lie when it comes to sex and how sex is discussed and acted out among religionists. They lie to themselves about their own sexual behavior. They pretend that they don't do what everyone knows that they do, just like the little question I asked at the beginning. And they preach against the very behavior that they themselves engage in and pretend like they don't do it. And then they turn right around and they lie to their own children about their own behavior. Mommy, did you have sex? Daddy, did you have sex before you got married? Well, no, and you shouldn't either. We know darn good well they did. So how do we know this? We know this because the research shows that religionists engage in about the same level of sexual activity as non-religionists. If you're a secular person, you start masturbating about the same time as a Christian does, or a Catholic does, or a Muslim does. Humans are biological creatures. We start this behavior about the same time because it's biology. It has nothing to do with religion. How many of you saw our study on sex and secularism? What, 14,500 atheists told us about their sex lives. Okay, only a few of you. Get online and download it at ipcpress.com. Free download. We looked at that and we found that religionists are are doing the same thing we are doing, but they have to lie about it. They start having premarital sex about the same time. They start masturbating about the same time. They have just about as many affairs. I mean, all the things are about the same, regardless of what their religion is. But they tend to lie about it. They tend not to be truthful. So the evidence is that religionists, that evidence actually is that they do more than we do. For example, sexually transmitted infections. There's more sexually transmitted infections in most religious communities in the United States as there are in the least religious communities in the United States. If you look at porn use across the United States, the highest, most religious zip codes have the highest use of porn 6 days out of the week. And I'm not kidding you. But they more than make up for it. Sunday it goes down, but they more than make up for it the rest of the week. If you want to see that data, look at a book called A Billion Wicked Thoughts. Great book, came out about 2 years ago. Documents this going way back to the beginning of the internet. We can document this stuff now in ways we couldn't before. Religionists get divorced more than secularists tend to. And here's the killer. Most religious groups have the most abortions. It's a very strong correlation between the number of abortions a group has and how religious they are. Now here's a trick question. What's the most religious group in the United States that has the most abortions? Catholics. I'll guarantee you won't guess it. No, but Catholics are a good guess. No, you won't even guess it because it's so obvious. Black women. Black women are the most religious group in the United States. Black women have the highest number of abortions. Right behind them, though, are white evangelical women, who are the second most religious group in the United States, and they have the second most number of abortions per capita, per population. Oklahoma, very religious state, lots of abortions going on there. Of course, they have to sometimes cross state lines to do it. They go to Wichita, where they murder doctors. I grew up in Wichita. So because of religious shame, is that they can't control their behavior. I mean, if you deny you do something, then you're going to have a hard time controlling it when you do it. So they channel their sex urges, sometimes in very inappropriate ways. And they experience self-loathing, self-disgust about their own behavior. And then they turn around and they have to lie to their children and their spouse about their behavior because they can't talk openly and honestly about the kind of sexuality and sexual behavior that they'd like to engage in. And I'm talking about normal, rational, legal sexual behavior, and they still can't talk about it. And they may express their sexual frustration and anger and blaming others and judging others and in their homophobia, among other things, of course. So we can see as just a part of being religious, this pent-up inability to express and talk rationally about one's sexuality and what you do with it. In fact, I think that the roots of homophobia in most cultures, especially in the United States, comes from a fear of masturbatory activity. I think most people who are homophobic can't admit they masturbate and can't admit they have fantasies, can't act upon those fantasies in a rational way. And what they do, they project them onto other people, mainly people who are different than them, or they perceive to be different than them. And here's evidence that goes right to Mark Driscoll. Mark Driscoll is the megachurch minister, I believe it's in Seattle, of Mars Hill. You've probably heard about Mars Hill. Well, here's what he says. Masturbation could be a form of homosexuality because it is a sexual act that does not involve a woman. If a man were to masturbate while engaged in other forms of sexual intimacy with his wife, then he would not be doing so in a homosexual way. However, any man who does so without his wife in the room is bordering on homosexual activity, particularly if he's watching himself in the mirror and being turned on by his own male body. What the fuck? Where did he... I've never even done that before. This is pretty clear evidence. This guy is hung up. You know darn good and well this guy masturbates. And he's telling us not to do it. And you know darn good and well he's done it in front of a mirror probably too many times with or without his wife. So I think if we look at the roots of homophobia in the United States, and probably in lots of other places, it probably, there's a component of it that's directly related to a person's inability to enjoy their own body. Because that's homosexual. Enjoying your own body, as far as this guy is concerned, is homosexual behavior, and that's against what God says you can do. So, with religion, it's a one-size-fits-all. You either do it our way, or you're going to hell. Now, our way could be somewhat different. The Muslims have a different way than the Catholics. The Catholics have a different way than Hindus. Hindus have a different way than the Buddhists. But they all have their own way, and it's our way or the highway. So, with religion, religious sexuality is actually unnatural. It is actually unnatural to behave the way the Pope tells you to behave sexually. It's designed to make you feel guilty, and it's intended to create shame in you. Shame so that you'll come back to the religion you learned it from and continue in that particular religion. Now, to help understand this, think about this. There are probably 10,000 sex acts for every live birth. For every live birth a human has. Now, there are actually people these days, they're choosing not to have children at all, so every sex act in their life is non-procreative. 10,000 times or more. Now, let's include masturbation in that because that's a sex act. So whether you're having sex with somebody else or having sex with yourself, at least 10,000 times for every time a baby is born, which tells us that sex is for bonding, sex is for enjoyment, and quite frankly, sex is for keeping the inventory clean and the pipe, keeping the pipes clean and the inventory fresh, with respect to men, of course, and to keep the sexual response fresh and fast for women as well. So we can see it has benefits biologically, but that's not the way the religionists look at it. When the Pope says, here's our ex-Pope here, but he's going to an apartment with his best buddy. Did you read about that? He's going to get to go with his secretary, and they're going to live together in perfect harmony and celibacy. I'm sure. Well, he may be celibate. I don't know. Now, he probably wasn't one time. But anyway, this is my dog, Sugar. She has a rule. If there's any dog in the picture, it has to be her. So, Sugar, if Sugar were to have sex, she would have sex only when she was in heat, only when she was receptive, when she was fertile. That's the way animals. Almost every species on the planet only has sex when it is fertile and ready to be fertilized. Whether that species is an insect, or a fish, or a mammal, there's only a few species on this planet that have sex outside of that boundary. And there's only really three, maybe four, dolphins, and the higher apes, bonobos, chimps, and humans. Even gorillas tend to only have sex when the female's in heat. So we can't even count gorillas in that area. So when a Pope says only have sex for procreation, what he's saying is only have sex like an animal. Now how many times have you heard religionists tell you, well, you just want to have sex like an animal, you secularists, you atheists, you just want to have orgies all the time. I go to these conferences all the time,
and I've never been invited to the orgies. So, if there's an orgy in here tonight, please let me know. I just want to see one for a change. All right. So the Pope is not, he doesn't realize he's telling you to have sex like an animal if you only are having sex for procreation. So shame, fear, and guilt are the primary motivations for any religious program of sexuality. And it's always to religion's advantage to instill an irrational fear of sex because it allows the religion to install a guilt program and activate the guilt cycle. Now, in my books, The God Virus, I talk about the guilt cycle, and it's a really cool psychological con game. And that is, let's raise you and teach you how to be guilty about things like masturbation. Because no child is raised feeling guilty about masturbation. If you've had a child as a baby, you know they're always touching themselves. We even have videos of babies touching themselves in the womb, especially boy babies, so we know kids are always masturbating. It's a very normal thing. You have to teach a child to feel guilty. And that's what religion does. It gives you the disease, in this case, the guilt disease. And then it says, you know, but if you want forgiveness, you got to come back here to get forgiveness. Now think about that. Catholics don't confess their sins to Baptist ministers. Baptists don't confess their sins to Muslim imams. You only get forgiveness from your sin in the place you learned, the place you got the disease. You only get a cure for the disease in the place you got the disease in the first place. Now, you really don't get a cure for it. You just get a respite from the guilt. You go confess your sins to the priest and, I'm guilt-free for a few days until I do it again. We have a guy, he's an ex-priest in one of our Recovering from Religion groups. He actually leads one now. He tells a story. He was 8 years, he was in seminary. Through high school and college, seminary, I don't know what they do, but anyway, 8 years. He said, I could go about a month without masturbating, and then I do it, and they think, oh, I'm going to go to hell. I better go confess my sins. So he has to go find a priest and confess his sins, and relief. I'm okay. I won't go to hell. Another 30 days goes by, and he does it, and he's got to go confess his sins. This went on for 8 years until he was on some kind of a trip to the zoo, and he saw a bunch of bonobos, or chimps in the zoo, having sex all over the place. And he realized, well, the Pope believes in evolution, so these guys all are related to me, and they're having sex all over the place. Maybe sex isn't such a bad thing, and that was his first step towards atheism. He never actually practiced as a Catholic priest. He got out before he went that step. So without sexual fear, guilt, and shame, religion really has no hold on you. Imagine taking guilt out of religion, taking sexual guilt out of religion. What would you have left? What is a Catholic without sexual guilt? What is a Jew without sexual guilt? What is a Mormon? We found in our research that Mormons are the most sexually guilty religion. Now, that's from our research, and it's obvious there's problems with our research in terms of bias, but I think it's probably accurate. Mitt Romney is really uptight. We'll come back and talk about him. So let's talk about the politics of shame. And I want you just to imagine this fellow right here. He never masturbates. He never had sex outside of marriage. He never used birth control. His wife had an abortion. We're not supposed to talk about that. And he wants to give his Catholic disease, his sexually transmitted disease, to the rest of us. And yes, I believe religion is a sexually transmitted disease. I think he's one fucked up dude, personally. But look at this guy. You know, he got 47% of the vote. 47% of the vote came from states that have high levels of Google searches on gay sex. Isn't that interesting? I mean, just look at those states and look at the states he won. I mean, there's some difference, but it's not a perfect correlation, but it's very close. So what's going on there? Religion tends to drive people. It tends to make people deny their sex drive, and then they turn around and do the very thing they condemn everybody else for doing in the process. We also see religion is very instrumental in condemning women, in shaming women, in slut shaming. I mean, that's all our friend Rush Limbaugh did for Sandra Fluck as she was testifying against, you know, the problems of trying to find birth control or getting birth control as a college student. And he was using the shame that we all see, and religions teach us,
He didn't make this stuff up. He learned it somewhere. And our entire culture is constantly finding ways to shame women. I'll come back and talk about that. We also see male shame. There's a lot of shame around sexuality with males, but we don't think of it in this way. Here's the way it works. Men, you were taught, I don't know about you, but I was taught, you have to control your women. If your daughter or your wife is out dressed inappropriately, maybe showing too much cleavage or something, or too short a dress, then it reflects directly back on you as the man because you're not controlling your women. It's a shame reflection back on the males. Now we think, well, that's not very bad in the United States. You look over in Iran where if a girl wears too short a dress or anything that shows anything, they get their head chopped off. That's male shame because in those cultures, the male is responsible for disciplining the women in the household. And if discipline means putting her to death because she shamed the whole family, that's what they do. Well, it wasn't that many years ago we had the same problem in the United States. I mean, the laws, as recently as 1780, Blackstone said if a man's wife commits adultery on him, the jury should not convict him of murder. Maybe manslaughter, but not murder. It was rare to see any man convicted of murder in England up until the mid-1800s. So it's a shame thing. It's an honor killing if the woman has sex outside of marriage or if the daughter has a boyfriend before she gets married. And we also see males are told you're supposed to control yourself. We saw in the Mark Driscoll quote, you shouldn't be masturbating. Now, I don't know about you guys. This is just a question for the guys because the Bible says nothing about you gals masturbating, so you get off free. But the rest of us guys, I was told when I was in the locker room, you know, you shake it three times, you're a homo. You shake it three times, you're playing with it, right? How many of you guys heard that? Yeah, right. I shook it a hell of a lot more than three times. But that was what we were told. Well, that is male shaming. It's saying you cannot enjoy your own body, and if you do, there's something wrong with you. And it puts the onus on you to control yourself in unnatural ways. And the shame of the locker room is like the spreading of foot fungus. I don't know about you, but when I was a kid in gym class, they always had these boxes where you had to put your feet in so you could get rid of the foot fungus or prevent the foot fungus. Well, if they didn't have those boxes, it would only take one boy in that locker room to spread foot fungus to almost everybody else. You could spread that disease really easily. Well, the same thing is true of sex-negative ideas. It would only take one or two boys in a locker room telling the other ones, you're a homo if you shake it too many times, before you spread that stupid idea to a whole lot of boys who then go out and believe this shit and actually live their entire lives thinking about their sexuality as something to be ashamed of. And, of course, being told at the same time that women are to be controlled and it's a shame reflection on you if your women don't behave the way you think they should in public or whatever else rules your particular culture has. So religion gives you this disease. And believe me, all these things I'm talking about come from religion. Even if you're a secular person, if you're a secular boy in eighth grade in school, you're going to get infected with religious ideas about sexuality. It's just going to happen. That's the way these things work. They spread like foot fungus. So religion gives you the disease, and it gives you the cure for getting rid of the disease temporarily. But it never cures the disease because the disease is guilt. So here's a quote. I want you to memorize this quote. You can take religion out of sex, but you can't take sex out of religion. If you took sex out of religion, most religions would collapse. The only religions that wouldn't collapse are Unitarians. No, they wouldn't collapse because they're very sex friendly, sex positive. But Islam would collapse without sexual guilt. Catholicism would collapse without sexual guilt. Orthodox Judaism would collapse without sexual guilt. You name the, even Buddhism would collapse without sexual guilt. And don't let anybody tell you Buddhism is a philosophy. In California, it is. California Buddhists, yeah. But look at how it's practiced in Thailand or in Cambodia or in Vietnam. It is clearly a religion. It clearly is misogynistic. It clearly has shame around sexuality. And it's just as bad as Hinduism. It's just as bad as Catholicism or any of the others. Now you're probably sitting here and thinking, well, I'm not religious. Why, Daryl, why are you talking this way to me? How does it apply to me? Well, here's how it applies. You're swimming in a sexually polluted culture, a culture that's constantly giving you sex-negative messages about yourself, about your sexuality, about other people's sexuality, and it's constantly having this undercurrent that sex is shameful. Sex is something you can't talk out loud about. And there's certain sexual parts of your body you can't mention. There's certain sexual acts that you could never talk about in public. But what I found is many secularists are infected. We're infected with these ideas. And many of us left churches to become secular. How many of you were raised very religious? Okay. And I'm guessing you were all raised with some sexual ideas in those churches. And they weren't sex positive. They weren't encouraging you to masturbate on a daily basis. They probably weren't. They weren't telling you premarital sex is okay, just use some condoms and be sure and negotiate proper sexual behavior between your partner. They probably weren't doing that, unless it was Unitarians. Don't really count them. You know, they're just too nice. They're too good. We did find that the Unitarians are the most sex-friendly of all religions and even better than atheists. And the reason they're better in our research, the reason they're better than atheists and agnostics is because they have a great sex education program called All Our Lives. It's a wonderful program. I didn't even know it existed before we did our research. And I went back to the Unitarians and said, look at this, this is great. Why are you guys doing so well, according to our research? And they said, because we've got this sex education program. And you think about it, we atheists, we don't have any place to send our kids for sex education. So that I never tell people to go back to church, except if you want to educate your children well, send them to the Unitarian Church. It's a good place to send and find good sex positives. It's age appropriate, it's gender neutral, it's friendly to all types of sex and sexuality. So, if you experience shame or guilt around your sexuality, you're probably infected with religious ideas. We act like Christians when we hide or act ashamed of our sexuality. When we pretend that we don't or didn't do something like have premarital sex or masturbate. If you have trouble telling your partner that you had other partners before them, or if you had trouble telling your children about that, yeah, I had 10 boyfriends before I got married, I don't care. If you had trouble telling your children about your prior sexual behavior, you're probably infected with religious ideas. You're acting like a Christian. We act like Christians when we let them condemn us or condemn other people for perfectly normal legal behavior. And we act like Christians when we can't even talk to our own partner about what we'd like to do sexually. We act like Christians when we won't admit that we like pornography. And the fact is, the vast majority of people use pornography in some way, shape, or form. There's in A Billion Wicked Thoughts, they talk about this incredibly conservative women's website that lots of fundamentalist women go to. And what they found is the IP addresses of those women, or the whatever, you know, they've got some way of figuring this out, 40% of those women also visit porn sites in some way, shape, or form. So if you also look at what religious women read, I mean, Harlan Quinn novels are pretty, the covers alone are pornographic. I have an ex-mother-in-law, you could almost get off on looking at the covers of some of those that she was reading. But she was a good Christian. She never thought about having, I doubt if she ever masturbated. So let's think about this. You might, you know Jeff Foxworthy and his thing, you might be a redneck. Well, I'm going to say this. You might be a Christian atheist if you feel guilty about masturbating. You might be a Christian atheist if you have difficulty talking to your children about sex or sexuality. You might be a Christian atheist if you have difficulty talking to your spouse or your partner about sexual fantasies you'd like to try. You might be a Christian atheist if you feel disgust around normal sexual activities. You might be a Christian atheist if you shame other people for their sexuality or for their behavior, especially if you shame women I see atheists online shaming other atheist women because they disagree with them, and they use shame-based language. That pisses me off when I see adult atheist males shaming adult atheist females. It makes no sense whatsoever, except if you realize they're infected with religious shame ideas. Now, I'm not excusing the behavior, but I am explaining the behavior. I think there's a big difference between excusing behavior and explaining it. I think we need to educate ourselves. I think we as atheist men need to educate ourselves about the pollution that's gotten into our minds about who women are and what women are and what rights and what they should and should not be. And I think there's a lot of us, well, I think it's definitely a minority. I'm not saying everybody, most of us in here probably aren't like that. But the few that are, we need to be on them. Do not let them get away with that shit. So, religion's weak spot is sex and sexuality. And I think we should not let them set the table. We should not let them dictate to us what we can and we can't talk about. And we need to follow the lead of the gay community. And I think the gay community has set the pace, and they're way ahead of us. I was glad to see Chris. We're having the march tomorrow. Instead of gay pride, we're having atheist pride. I hope the gays will all join us, because we've certainly joined them a lot. But we need to show our own pride. We should not let them set the agenda for us. So here's my suggestions. I'm going to give you some ideas, things you can leave here with. First up, be out about your sexuality. That's what the gay community's done. They say, we don't give a shit whether you like us or not. We are out. We are in your face. We're working next to you. And we're not going to hide the fact that we're homosexual. We're not going to pretend like we're married to somebody. We're not going to dress like you think we should dress. We're going to be who we are. And that's what the gay community has brought to our culture, a pride about who they are. And I think we can learn from that. We need to have pride about who we are, and we need to be out about it. And that is a direct challenge to religion. Like I said earlier, if you took sex out of religion, it would collapse. I think we should be challenging religion on the level of sexuality. So I'm not a Christian, and I don't have to act like one. So here's what we can do. We can use our language, and language is a powerful tool. You can argue all day about whether God exists or not, but I think there's other ways to attack this issue of people having these crazy ideas about their sexuality. I could say things like, sure, I fornicate, just like most religious people do. Don't let them set the agenda. When they say, well, fornication's wrong, I'm going to turn right around and say, well, most religious people that I know have fornicated at one point in their life, and maybe are now. Sure, I masturbate. Don't you? Let's make them see how unnatural it is to not masturbate. That is just an unnatural act. To not masturbate. Now, I'm not saying, folks, don't get me wrong here. If you don't masturbate, it's okay. I'm not going to make you. But condemning other people and saying you've never done it when you have, that's what I'm after. Let's not lie, and let's not let them get away with lying. They will pretend all day long they never had premarital sex and they never masturbate when you and I know darn good and well they do. 95% of all Americans, according to every poll going back to the 1950s, shows that 95% of Americans have premarital sex. Now, they may marry the person they had premarital sex with, but it's still premarital sex, wrong in the eyes of their God, and they're the ones out condemning us for doing exactly the same thing that they do. Sure, I enjoy pornography, just like most religious people do. They just can't admit it. Isn't it interesting that porn rises 6 days out of the week in the most religious communities and drops only on Sunday? I mean, just throw a little fact out there once in a while. It might help educate them. I think we should frame their behavior. They have been framing our behavior. They've been saying we are the perverts. We're the ones that want to have orgies all the time. We're the ones that want to get divorced. We want to have all the sex partners. They're always saying that about us. Like I say, I'm never going to invite to the orgies, though. So if they are there, I'm not seeing it. I'm seeing us behave very normally. We're loyal to our spouses. We're loyal to our children. We try to teach them right things. We don't seem to be a lot different than them, except that we're honest. and they can't be. So I think we should be frame their behavior, and the main thing we should frame their behavior around is control of women. You've heard me come back to this several times, but I think this is a very important part of all patriarchal religions. They want to control women. And Christianity is no different than any others, and so is Mormonism. We need to challenge this, and here's the way we can challenge them. We can just kind of reverse the roles here. For example, a woman might say, I take birth control because I like sex, inside or outside of marriage, just like Newt Gingrich and Rush Limbaugh do. Why not show the double standard here? If Rush Limbaugh can have four wives, if Newt Gingrich can have three wives and who knows how many hundreds of lovers, still be a Catholic and condemn us because we don't, quote, pray. I mean, that's what he said just not long ago. Why would I vote to you if you don't pray? Well, I don't know what God he's praying to, maybe the God of sex, but he sure had a lot of lovers when he was a congressman. So I think we should be out. We should be tactful. We should also be realized that, you know, there's consequences for being too out about things. I don't want anybody losing their jobs, but I do want people to be as honest as you can within a context. For example, if you're a practicing nudist, be out about it. Be proud about it. There's nothing wrong with being a nudist. If you're kinky, be not ashamed. Let people know, yeah, I like some kinky stuff. Tie me up and spank me sometimes. Or I like tying somebody else up and spanking them sometimes. There's nothing wrong with that. It's a hell of a lot of fun if that's your thing. And there's nothing wrong, and there's a lot wrong with condemning other people for doing that. If you're polyamorous, as much as you can, let people know about it. There's nothing wrong with it. I mean, just because the Christians think they should be monogamous, I dare say you'd know very few. You might, it's possible, you don't know a single monogamous person. It is possible that nobody in this room knows a single monogamous person. You think about that. The definition of monogamy, according to Jesus, was one sex partner for life. That's monogamy. The anglerfish. The male is a real teeny guy, and he embeds himself in the big female's skin, and he stays there for life. That's monogamy. There's almost no species on the planet that's monogamous. If you've had more than one partner, sex partner, in your life, you're not monogamous. And I ask people, do you think you know somebody who's monogamous? And sometimes people raise their hand. And here's my question, how do you know? If it's not you, how do you know? People say, well, I know my parents were monogamous. Well, maybe they were, but there's no way to prove it. And unless it's you, you wouldn't really know. We know humans are really, really good at sneaking around. And the genetic evidence shows us that sometimes. And there's a lot of books about this. There's a great book called The Myth of Monogamy. Anybody read that book? Great book by Brash and Lipton. Pretty much shows there's hardly any species on the planet that are monogamous, especially not birds. What they do show us is there's two kinds of monogamy. There's social monogamy and there's sexual monogamy. And birds are very good at the social monogamy stuff, but they're still out screwing other people. It's just the way they work. Humans are the same way in many cases. If you're anything sexual, I don't care if you're gay, you're bisexual, you're heterosexual, you're asexual, there's nothing wrong with being asexual either. Be open about it. Let people know. Don't let the religionists shame and guiltify us. On the other side, let's support others. Be openly vocal and supportive of others when religionists try to condemn and shame other people. Write letters to the editor. Post on religious pages. I love this. Go on a religious page and talk about the minister who says you shouldn't have sex, and just ask a question. Say, do you think he ever masturbates? Just ask questions. You don't have to say anything, but ask questions on religious sites. I think they come on our sites all the time and tell us we're going to hell. So just go on their site once in a while and say, do you think he ever had sex with any of those three girlfriends he had in Bible college? I think they probably masturbate. They probably had sex before marriage. Don't let them get away with pretending they don't engage in these sexual activities. You know, you can debate whether God exists all you want. I don't care. Go do all those debates. But I don't think it's very productive. Very few times do you see people change their mind around those kind of debates. But I think what we can do is plant seeds of doubt in their heads about behavior. We can point out to them, as I did in the Las Vegas, had 8 hours of sitting in Las Vegas airport last week when I came back from Australia, and I had two Christians to talk to. So, you know, they're sitting ducks as far as I'm concerned. Don't know if I converted them, but I sure did get them to admit that they did masturbate once in a while. Because when I say, yeah, I masturbate, and I had premarital sex, and I've had three girlfriends at once, of course, each of them had two other boyfriends or whatever, when you start being open and honest with people, it forces them to be open and honest with you or lie. I don't care which they do. Be open and honest if you like, or lie. But the fact is they have to lie consciously. They have to consciously say in their head, oh yeah, I do masturbate. I did have two boyfriends before I got married, but I'm going to have to tell him I didn't. So you create some cognitive dissonance in them. And it's a great technique. And I'll swear to you, there's been many times people come back to me, maybe a year later, and say, wow, that conversation changed my mind about what my church has been teaching me on sex and sexuality. So, things like, sure, I talked to my children about masturbation and birth control. You know what? I told them how normal it is and not to listen to other children if they say their religion says it's wrong. Attack them right there at the child-rearing level. You have a right to tell your children those religious people are screwed up. And I want you to know it right up front. Masturbation is fine. Have sex before marriage. Here's what you can do to prevent pregnancy and disease. It's nothing wrong with that. And let other parents know that's the way you're talking to your children. Of course, they may not come back and talk to you again. But they know your children are not going to believe the bullshit their children are trying to put in the locker room. They're not going to be infected with foot fungus or infected with ideas that are sex negative about sex. In conversation, say things like, yeah, my husband and I have been in open marriage for 20 years. We really enjoy it. There's nothing wrong with being in open if it works for you. There's no religion. There's no law against being in an open marriage. We don't put people in prison for that anymore. So I'm not a Christian, and I'm not bound to Christian rules about sex and sexuality. And I don't have to pretend that I follow their rules. And I can quietly and consistently challenge those rules as I interact with Christians. For example, if somebody is racist, I will challenge them. Nothing pisses me off more than hear people be racist against other people. Even in private, even telling me stupid jokes, I will call them on it. If I see somebody who's sexist, I will call them on that. And if I see one who is sex negative, I will call them on that too. And I think that's an area we have not stepped into. I mean, many of us will call people out on racist jokes and sexist jokes, but we haven't gotten used to the idea of sex negative ideas need to be challenged as well. So let people know that you're sex positive and stand up for who you are as a sexual being. And let go. Let go of things like shame of your own body. Too many times I see atheists who are ashamed of their body. Here, let me give you a news flash here. This just came in on the AP wire. It's the only body you're going to get. If you're ashamed of your body, that's a real problem because you are the only person that's going to be using that body for this particular lifetime. Let's learn how to respect our bodies. And let's not be ashamed of them. Let go of judgment of other people's bodies. Let go of judgment of other people's sexuality and the way they act their sexuality out. Guilt about your own desires and desires. Let's let go of guilt about our own fantasies. There's nothing wrong with fantasies. Now, there's some fantasies you would never want to act out. And there's some fantasies that are just darn illegal. But fantasies are in your head. They don't cause anybody else any harm. They're your fantasies, and there's no reason to be ashamed of those. So let's go on the offensive. About a year ago, Maryam Namazi did a nude calendar, and she's challenging the patriarchal society of the United States, but she was also challenging Islam in using the nude calendar. And I'm proud to say two of my friends are in the calendar. And these are two of my friends that had their own pictures taken, and that's my library right there. I did not take the pictures. Quite frankly, they snuck into my house after I was asleep. Took the pictures. Jerry DeWitt was at my house and he was sleeping in the other room and neither one of us knew what they were doing. Now, they had my permission, don't get me wrong. I just didn't know they were going to do it that night in that way. So I missed it all. I really, really am regret that. So ask embarrassing questions. Things like, does your preacher or priest or imam masturbate? You know, there's nothing wrong with asking that question. They tell you not to. I just want to know, do they do it themselves? Ask them, did they have premarital sex? You know, I was in the airport, and I'm talking to this gal, and she said, well, premarital sex is wrong. I don't want anybody coming to my school and teaching my kids premarital sex is right. So I just asked the woman, did you have premarital sex? And there's silence. And then she says, well, yeah. Okay, then how many men were you in bed with before you married your husband? Silence. You know what she said? That's none of your business. Oh, but it's your business to tell me I can't have sex before marriage. It's your business to tell teachers they can't tell things like that. It's your business to say sex education can't be taught in schools. And yet I can't ask a question to find out if you're practicing what you're asking me, you're preaching to me. So simply asking people, did you have premarital sex, brings that cognitive dissonance. Oh, I'm asking my children, I'm trying to get my teachers in my community and school boards in my community to do what I myself could not do. Brings cognitive dissonance into their brains. Do you expect your children to do what you couldn't do? That was my next question to that woman. I said, now you have 3 kids and 2 grandkids, and you're telling me they can't do what you did yourself. She got red in the face, and it was about 3 minutes later we stopped the conversation. I can't help that, but it's a reasonable question to ask. And I think simply asking those questions is perfectly legitimate in a polite conversation. I wasn't being aggressive. I was just asking her questions. So be honest with your own children if you're a secularist. Tell your children if you've had several lovers before you got married. Tell them you've masturbated. I masturbated since I was 12. Todd over here says it's 11 for him, right? Yeah. But 12. He was at the American Atheist Convention, and he's looking up with big eyes and said, no, it's earlier than that. And be comfortable with your own sexuality. Challenge the shame. Challenge the shame and the guilt in yourself. If you feel shame or guilt, it's generally related to the religious training you got and religious ideas you got in the locker room or somewhere like that. Your shame and guilt helps perpetuate this culture of sexual oppression, especially sexual oppression of women. And your inability to be open and honest about your sexuality is a sign of continued religious infection. I don't care if you're an atheist or not, you're still infected with religious ideas if you have these symptoms that I've described. So we are unique, as far as I'm concerned. We are secular sexuals. And we're not tied to religious guilt and shame. We're not Mormons. We're not Mormon sexuals. We're not Catholic sexuals. We're not Hindu sexuals. I am a secular sexual. And I don't have to act like a Catholic sexual or a Muslim sexual. So here's the bottom line. Sex is fun, and so is drinking. So you need to do them responsibly. And, you know, there's no Jesus to forgive you if you hurt someone else. So we have to be extra responsible. They can always go back to the priest and confess. We can't do that. Don't be a vector for religion, and don't be a vector for sexually transmitted infection either. And, oh, by the way, if you do have a sexually transmitted infection, own up to it. Be honest about it. Don't let it shame you, and don't shame yourself for it. I see too many people who got STIs, and they feel ashamed. Where'd they get that idea? Are they ashamed of having a cold? Are they ashamed of having mumps or measles? No. Disease is disease. Where you got it, you might have got it from blood transfusion. I don't know. The fact is, it's a wrong thing to be shameful about, because what happens? You feel guilty. Shame drives you into doing things you shouldn't do, like withholding information from your doctor or withholding information from your partner. There's crazy stuff people do when they feel shame. So be open. Be responsible with any partners and get treatment and manage it if that's the case. So, shame around STIs causes people to be dishonest. They withhold information, they fail to get treatment, and it's largely based on religious ideas. So to wrap this up, why I wrote Sex and God was to help people like you and I get over the residual effects of religious training about our sexuality. I've seen too many atheists that still are hung up around sexual issues. I want to build a framework around sex and sexuality, and I want us to use that framework, much like Catholics use their framework, to govern and tell people what they can and can't do. I want you to celebrate your sexuality and be positive about it. And finally, I want us all to be secular sexuals. All right? It's warm in here, don't you think? All right, so what happened to my... Oh, there it is. Did I? All right. Well, it was a good trick, but it didn't work very well, did it? All right, so sure a lot cooler without it. All right, so here's the bottom line. I am a sex-positive atheist. I'm proud of it, and I'm a secular sexual. And I want you to leave this room thinking about yourself. You're no longer a Baptist sexual. You're not a Catholic sexual. You're a secular sexual. And I want you to think about what that means for you, what it means for your wife, your husband, your children, your grandchildren, and help them understand that and act like a secular sexual rather than a Christian sexual. Thank you, folks. Appreciate your attention.